This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 6th of October, 1955. The title of this lecture is Stable Datum and Confusion. This lecture is 58 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
I'd like to talk to you now about the stable datum and confusion. I'll give you a mental image picture of this at once. Can you envision a cloud of hit or miss particles traveling in erratic directions, which bring about a confusion that it would be impossible to trace easily? Have an idea of such a cloud of energy particles. Now let us suppose that we looked into this cloud and we found a single solid figure that was not in motion. Now it's very easy to go in for that and to use that for the excellent reason that it's on practically any track and is a symbol which has been carried along as though it had great meaning. And as a matter of fact, it does have great meaning. It is the symbol of confusion and the stable datum. We come to axiom 53. A stable datum is necessary for the alignment of data. That is axiom 53. A stable datum is necessary for the alignment of data. Now, we had a ghost of this in the Dianetic axioms. We had a ghost of this when we had data of comparable magnitude and several others hinged upon this. And all of those now become much more simplified. And we just see simply that in order to bring about order in a confusion, it is not necessary to stop the confusion. It is only necessary to have one particle which is known in its location so that we can relate to that the action of a second particle, so that we could relate to these two actions of the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, hundred and millionth, and we wouldn't have a confusion anymore of any kind, would we? Now, although that is an energy picture I have given you, let us take a body of data. Now, before a particle becomes a particle, it was a consideration. So let's just move upstairs. And we get axiom 51, that postulates and communication as is missed. Either one, postulates or communication, can knock out missed. It's not an exact statement of the axiom, but that's its sense. Axiom ends, so auditing is possible. Now in the axioms in general, we find out that if we change missed, we get a persistence, and the way we get a persistence is to change something. We also discover that if we wish to as-is something, we would have to get an exact duplicate of it, or, in axiom 51, simply throw a postulate in there. Now, anything as-is in the presence of sufficient life. Matter is in the unhappy condition of existing only so long as people are sufficiently dead. Got that? So this is a very happy view. Although things all persist when we change them, and the more we change them, the more they persist, any postulate, not even the right postulate, got that now, not even the right postulate, thrown in or around or into the vicinity of a particle is sufficient light to make it go. Now that's odd, isn't it? Because you think it has to be the exact postulate which made that particle, huh? Well, there are two ways out. You just remember there are two ways out. One is throw in the right particle, which brings about, really, in essence, the highest level of perfect duplication. The highest level of perfect duplication is simply brought about by throwing in the right particle. Bang! But the funny part of it is that the only reason it as is at all was because life had been added. And therefore any postulate would have a deteriorating effect upon it. And two or three random postulates would have nothing to do with it whatsoever are liable to blow it up. Now, we have a mystery walking down the street. Is it a bear? Is it a man? Do you know why it stays a mystery? Because nobody says, it's a bear. Everybody says, that's right, that's a bear. Because nobody says, it's a man. And then have everybody say, that's right, it's a man. Now you see, and is it or is it not is a mystery. It's not life. Unless you were to throw the exact mystery postulate at it and say, well, there it goes down the street. Boy, that's sure a mystery. And everybody say, that's a mystery. And there'd be no bear and no man. Get the idea? But if we are being diffident and we are saying, well, we don't know quite the postulate to throw in there. Is it a bear? Well, we might throw the postulate in there. It's a bear. Is it a man? Well, we might throw the postulate in there. It's a man. Note what has happened. We have not thrown either postulate into the mass. Neither one. We said, well, we'll speculate a while, and as we stand here arguing, sooner or later, we may discover the basic postulate that it really was, and we will as-is the thing by declaring what it really is. And then by declaring what it really is, we will have its vanishment, or we'll at least understand it. That's a great oddity, you know. Because we view life as a collection of beings standing around trying to decide on the correct postulate to throw into what mass, and then being unable to decide which mass they ought to throw the postulate into. And only in that wise do we get a large, nice, smooth persistence of mist, which then gets bigger and bigger and more solid. You got it? It's real cute. So if we attack the problem of the mind as a speculative process, we would never, as is, any of the difficulties of the mind. Let's figure about it, see? Let's stand off to one side of the mind and discuss whether or not it is this or whether or not it is that, and let's never really throw a postulate into the mind at all. Now, I'll tell you a rather ridiculous way to go about this, but one which would be superior to speculating about it, and that would be to say, the mind is the gift of the god Rak-Rak. And that makes all of you who use minds servants of Rak-Rak. Now, you know that, don't you? And everybody would say, we know that. Long live Rak-Rak. The mind is based upon the following principles: that it is not based on bases, that it is baseless, that it is baseless, and we know that, don't we? Everybody would say, yay, yay. The best way to get cleared is to get three lamps with the oil of the island of Sandal and burn them with a proper incantation, saying all the while, wow, wow, whoop, whoop. Lighting them each in rotation as each new star arises above the horizon. And if you do this regularly, you will, in the course of time, feel wonderful. And everybody would. Why? They're actually tossing a postulate, not even the right one, but they're actually tossing a postulate into the subject. And if they start throwing postulates into the subject, the difficulties in the subject will start as ising. An awfully crude way to go about it, let me assure you. It's a very, very crude way to go about it. Just as almost anybody could build an electric motor, after a little experimentation of taking a magnet and winding a field around it, he'd find some current in it somehow or another. So could anybody start throwing postulates into the mind and do something there, as long as he were definite, positive, and alive about it, don't you see? All right. But it's much, much better to have the know-how of electric motors there before us and to throw some near approximation of electric motors into electric motors for trying to make them work or go away. Right? You get the idea. Because sooner or later, when we are dealing with an incorrect or unaligned, get that, unaligned set of postulates, somebody can come along and say, that is a confusion. And people will be able to look at it and not see a relationship from datum to datum, from postulate to postulate. They will not be able to see the necessity of lighting each one of the three lamps as each random star rises above the horizon, and they will not be able to see how wow, wow, whoop, whoop has anything whatsoever to do with the three stars. And somebody carefully explaining this to one and all will get a certain amount of agreement on the subject, and we attain what? We attain a confusion. And people say, well, we've been wrong. We shouldn't go on throwing these postulates into that. Let's stand off here alongside someplace and let's discuss the whole thing and see if we can kind of settle this thing till we find out what sort of postulate we ought to throw in over there. And then finally, as one discusses it, he finds there are so many schools and differences of opinion that nobody can quite talk about what we are talking about. So he finally decides that it's impossible to communicate on the subject, and so leaves the whole problem strictly alone. And the problem is thrown on total automatic and therefore can go on and on and on and on. Until somebody comes along with a sufficiently convincing, stable datum and says, see all that confusion over there? Well, if you look into it carefully, you will find this postulate, which then aligns to it these postulates, and these postulates, and these postulates, and these postulates. And those particles, as they're flying around, are aligned to these, and these, and these. Everybody will look at it, and they'll say, where was all that confusion we thought was over there? It's gone. Now, the funny part of it was, it doesn't have to be the right postulate. You get the trick? It merely has to be a postulate which can have an association with a number of other postulates in the same problem. And you'd probably only have to get an association with 1/1,000th of the postulates present in order to get a tremendous agreement and everybody saying hurrah. See? You could leave scattered around in that confusion 99/100ths of those postulates still spinning like mad, you know, unidentified, not associated. No trick there at all as to how we got a bridge from that, those 1/100th of the total mass to the other 99/100ths of the total mass. And people would feel better about the whole thing. You know, they'd stop looking this way. They actually would, you see, because you've at least made an inroad into that. So one would say that the human or Thetan reaction to the situation is that it is far better to have a stable datum in a confusion than to have a confusion without a stable datum in it. You understand? Now, that is the basic computation of problems. It is better to have any stable datum in that confusion than to have a confusion with no stable data in it. Now, boy, that's certainly settling for halfpennies. Isn't it? But nevertheless, people will settle for that so that somebody can jump up early in the Christian era. Menikius, I think the name was. Forgotten. Never knew the fellow personally. His genetic line never went anyplace. And decided that the stable data of getting along with life was to omit the second dynamic. And if you simply omitted the second dynamic, then you would be successful. This confusion of the genetic line was too much for too many people, particularly with the abuses of Roman legionnaires going on leave after a 10-year enlistment in Illyricum. And people had gotten disgusted with the whole subject, the second dynamic. So they said, you see all this confusion around here? You know, all you've got to do is just abstain utterly, completely, and entirely from anything connected with the second dynamic, and these confusions all resolve. And immediately, a lot of people jumped up and said, hurrah, hurrah, and added it to Christianity. Hundreds and hundreds of years later, we find a little chap by the name of Schopenhauer, one fiving onto many sheets of foolscap. And stating that the way to cope with all this was just to stop it in its tracks. The only way you could defeat life would be to refuse completely to survive. Boy, that'd sure defeat it. Defeat you, too. But ever since, a lot of people have been going around saying, Schopenhauer, there was a man who brought order to chaos. That was a wonderful stable datum. As a matter of fact, every now and then, somebody comes up with one of these second dynamic stable data and says, now, that's the solution. So all those people around say, good, that's the solution. See that? Any stable data. Now, do you realize that they use a negative stable datum? With great enthusiasm. And do you realize that at one time or another, there has been a philosophy seeking to resolve the confusion of life, which omitted any one of the dynamics from the confusion of life? There's been a philosophy that omitted one at a time, and some that omitted two or three at a time. Now, we just say, that is the stop point. Omit that dynamic, and we'll resolve the confusion. And they always have a lot of people who say, hooray! Why? Because people know the dynamic exists. It is not articulated, but they know the dynamic exists. And knowing that the dynamic has an existence itself, they can then omit it. And say, therefore, we will place this stable datum here. The confusion of life resolves around the stopping of this dynamic. And if we stop this dynamic, we will then bring order to the remainder of the confusion. And always, because there is an agreement on the dynamics, of course, they get a certain amount of agreement on this point. And you'll have a whole school of philosophy arising on the omitted dynamic. The anarchist is simply omitting the third dynamic as his staple datum. No government, see? Let's stop that third dynamic. Menikius and Schopenhauer and later on Freud were all tending in this direction. They'd say orientation of all the evil of life can be achieved by electing the second dynamic as a stable datum. All we have to do is just elect the second dynamic a villain, and instantly and immediately everything will align. Of course, nothing ever aligns when you take life out of it. So none of these drop-the-dynamic philosophies have ever been functional. You may not realize how far this goes. If we drop the sixth dynamic, MEST, out of the computation, we have early Indian philosophy. Their stable datum was that you dropped the sixth dynamic. You elected it the villain, and everything else aligned on this villainy, so all villainy would then be aligned and disappear. Only, quite in addition to that, in order to do this, they punctuated and threw into view some of the other dynamics, you see. The fifth went very strongly into view. See, the anarchists dropped the third. The communists dropped the eighth and the first. Now, you can look around, and you can find, of course, Schopenhauer, by the way, dropped the second and the fourth. He dropped two. Mankind and sex. So did Manichaeus drop two. But here we have an example of how to make a popular philosophy. You want to make a popular philosophy? Just drop a combination of the dynamics. Make it logical while you're dropping them, and you will have an enormous number of adherents. It'll be quite popular as a philosophy, because it'll at least go 1/100th of the way to as-ising the confusion with which people are surrounded. That's just a workable formula. Therefore, you can invent things like Brahmanism, and you can reinvent any existing philosophy, and you could certainly invent a whole lot of new philosophies using this formula of invention. Just at random, let's pick two numbers out of a hat. Let's drop the third and the seventh. And then let's dream up a philosophy which says that groups are evil, and all blame of any kind for any difficulty can be assigned to the group effort. And this is because there is no such thing as a group spirit of any kind. There's no esprit possible. And this explains all of the difficulties of man throughout the ages. And he is supposed in error that groups were capable of spiritual benefit. See? Third and seventh. Or we could drop the first and the second entirely. You see? And we could say, the fact that everybody lives for himself and the fact that everybody perpetuates only himself is responsible for the entirety of difficulty, and the truth of the matter is we should strongly go all out for the subject of groups, and let's accent two other dynamics, groups and dogs. And let's invent something called the cult of the dog. And you'd be surprised. You could go down and get very logical about this and explain this to people, and they'd say, what do you know? Do you know why? I mean, it's really true that you could do this. Because it was done to the American Indian, only they got him to drop out the fifth dynamic to the degree of dogs. See, they got him to drop dogs entirely. Their difficulty, they realized, and the stable datum that should be assumed is that all difficulty depends on dogs. And therefore, we'll have to kill all the dogs. They did. It's got to be quite a cult. That's right. That was just before they went down for the third time. Just before they disappeared forever and aye, why they killed off all their dogs. The buffalo would not come back until all the dogs were dead because of the jealousy of the buffalo god for the dogs. It was terribly logical. Doesn't even make sense to you, does it? You know why it doesn't make sense to you? Because an insufficient number of the related data are unavailable to you. You're not conscious of the additional available data on which they were operating. Got it? Now,
stable data tells you then that people don't care what kind of a stable datum they employ, as long as they can consider it a stable datum. Got it? It just doesn't matter what kind of a stable datum they employ. If they become allergic to confusion, and if they don't like confusion, then they will go in the direction of adopting stable data. And the amount of time they are allowed to dream up the stable datum has a great deal to do with it. Because given practically no time at all to grab a stable datum, to square away the confusion, they will grab the doggondest things. Just fantastic things. And it will become a stable datum on any subject which is confused to them. Let's say a dock is on fire, and there's a great deal of cargo there, and four chickens are in a crate, and at the moment the chickens fly out of the burning dock, the fire engines arrive. Stable data in the confusion. The person begins to rehearse it, is that fire engines are preceded by the white dove of peace. See, this would be totally insane, but then the person would align fires and fire engines and docks and ships and shipping and so forth on the white dove of peace. And after a while, some psychiatrist would come in and see this fellow doodling, and he's drawing flying chickens or something. And he says they're doves, and the psychiatrist wants to know why he's doing this. And the fellow says, well, the salvation of man depends upon his adoption of this symbol. Psychiatrist says, he's crazy. Oh, no, he's not. His stable data is crazy. Follow me? Therefore, you could say that the total pattern of aberration in any individual would be the pattern of his stable data in areas of confusion, which is out of agreement with his fellows. Now, why doesn't his stable data, as is, the entire confusion? Why doesn't it? Well, it will for a short time, until he starts to talk it over with somebody and they tell him it's impossible to communicate. You know how they do? He says, at last we have learned that the white dove of peace resolves all confusion. Wonderful. Somebody says, yeah, how do you know? Fellow's really saying, yeah, don't put that in that confusion. That's not an outright postulate. It's not sufficiently alive. Doesn't convince me. I'm still standing here. Didn't as is me. In addition to not as ising me, I don't think you can communicate with me. So it puts this fellow on a hectic line of wondering, well, now look, that didn't quite work. Just how can we modify it in order to make it more workable? And he's speculating now, isn't he? And the second that he's pulling back and waiting and speculating and so on about the whole thing, the confusion goes on and on and on and on and on. Most cases are kind of standing alongside of an enormous swirling confusion of data, one kind or another, having pulled back away from it and abandoned their own stable data in it, saying, I cannot possibly communicate with the center of this confusion. It's not possible. Every time I tell everybody it's white doves, they say no. So therefore, it's probably no. Doesn't as is, there it swirls. We have here an idiotically simple picture. Absolutely idiotic. It tells us that the way to lick a confusion is to, one, communicate, and two, communicate with certainty anything. Lay in with the communication any postulate. It doesn't matter what postulate. We get this great oddity, Zen Buddhism. We have this game. Somebody says,
why do all grasshoppers wear purple hats? The fellow's supposed to sit there and say, well, all grasshoppers wear purple hats because of their blue shoes. I mean, that's really, in essence, the extent of the game as I learned it when I was a kid. And if he doesn't immediately come up with a positive statement and a resolution of this very important problem, why, the fellow who asked him the question gets a chance to knock hell out of him. Wow! And they simply teach people to throw in with great aplomb stable data. Whether they know they're doing that or otherwise, we don't know. But I don't know, at least. I've never had anybody tell me this. But in essence, this would be quite interesting. You see, just teaching people to securely throw into any confusion any possible assurance or liveness in the form of a postulate. Throw anything in there and align anything to it, and you've got it. But let's dedicate ourselves to logic. Let's dedicate ourselves to getting flunked if we give the wrong logic. There's just another way of making the guy go back off and say, look, it's impossible to communicate. Now let's take this swirling mass again. Let's recognize that it will start to as is if we say that it depends on anything. We say this with certainty. We say, oh, that cloud there, that mass of swirling data, all confused and out of line, this non-understandable. Well, it's a very simple thing. The London buses, unable to handle some of the traffic problems they have, it's a wonderful thing. All conductors in London buses should be able to swear in Japanese. That solves the whole problem. And if we could simply convince them, the transit company, that this was the case, and if they would all of a sudden, with great aplomb, say, well, that's right. Driver swearing in Japanese. That does the whole thing up. Wonderful. And they got hold of the bus drivers, and they said, you know what's wrong with all this traffic control and so forth? Well, it's because you don't swear in Japanese. Now, everybody's got to learn how to swear in Japanese. The drivers all said, gee, you know, that's all right. Think of that. My golly, we certainly got it now. It resolves all these traffic problems. You know what? It would. Well, there are several technical things that I ought to go over here with great speed on this because it is a highly technical subject. Axiom 53, a stable datum is necessary for the alignment of data. Please note that the axiom does not say, get this, the right stable datum. That is the trick that keeps people from putting in any stable datum. See, that's just a trick. That's an impossible to communicate trick, you see. So that any stable data is necessary to the alignment of data. Got it? Now, is it really necessary for the rest of the data to be precisely aligned to the first stable datum? No, it's only necessary for a stable datum to be there, and then you go ahead and align the rest of the data to it. And you say, bus drivers, children, should have their stockings filled at 10:33 on Christmas Eve, and that is the associated data to bus drivers should swear in Japanese. This, you say, is a horrible disassociation. It's no connection at all. But devil, look who's saying that. Because the consideration is necessary that it associate. So you just make the consideration that these two things associate perfectly, and you've got it. Now, you've got an awful lot of automaticities of association. Do you mean to tell me that shoes necessarily associate with feet? Well, that's just proximity, isn't it? Shoes are close to feet. Well, you consider that shoes associate with feet every day when you put them on. But if you stopped considering this, you wouldn't put them on anymore.
And you wouldn't have this proximity, and the datum would not be true that shoes associate with feet. They're used for flags. Now, it's quite a trick getting two data associated, but you look at some of the data in this society which are associated, and you'll have a big laugh. I mean, it becomes very, very funny. But don't do this until you have the aplomb, which is not very hard to acquire since you merely do it, just throwing in stable data and say, well, that connects with that. Right? And after you get this a little bit and practice with this for a little while, why, then, really take a look at some of these things which are obviously associated. Now, let's take a very close association. 1 + 1 = 2. It's the most logical statement in the world, isn't it? Only it's not true. The 1 and the 1 are not the 2. They're simply close in approximation. But you say 1 + 1 = 2. Well, that's all right, but 1 what + 1 what = 2 what? Well, it equals the 2 that the first ones are. But the 2 over there is not the first ones. You see? And I'm not trying to explain it lightly. I could go into this deeply, significantly, and prove to you completely that 1 + 1 does not = 2. And if I did this well enough, mathematics would stop working. The confusions of the past, when they remain confusions, simply consist of the abandonment of the stable data of the past. One no longer considers it stable. Supposing we have been through a period of witchcraft where we believed that the proper thing tied around one's neck did the proper things. Right. Now we've abandoned that datum. We no longer believe it. Science is that operation which makes secondhand old stable data. It takes everybody's stable data and says we have a new logical system. And this new logical system gives you new stable data. Well, the reason science wins is because it was first stated with the greatest of assurance. And the reason it is losing is because it's now not stated with the greatest of assurance. If you've read a recent scientific paper, it started out with, well, we don't know exactly. The tests which we have just made are not entirely conclusive because the series has not yet been entirely turned in. But it would seem possible, as represented by the evidence in so-and-so's paper and so-and-so's paper and so-and-so's paper, that if we follow through the train of logic on the matter, we may be able to recover this material. And the following law is correct, except that it has 15 specific exceptions. That sound to you like good, solid, life, stable data, lively, crackerjack, right up and coming, up and atom stable data that everything will align to? Well, so we have drifted off in science now. Don't think that nuclear physics is a brand new bunch of discoveries. Nuclear physics is a drift off from certainty, to a point now where you talk to the nuclear physicists that are around and they're saying, zing, zing, zing. We don't know where we're going next. We haven't any idea. Now, they have tried to find out to the last crumb what the universe consists of. Only the crumb they stopped on was about 8,000 miles in diameter. And they didn't even find out what it consisted of before they suddenly started going with these terrific reservations. And you start making stable data with enormous reservations, and you've done it. See? One is no longer alive when he's doing this. It is not saying, now, that they did not come close here and there to the exact stable data, and did as is the problem. And this is why they still pay attention to the system of logic. Is because it almost hit. They did something on the order of 3/100ths of a resolution of the confusion. In other words, they were good enough to be better than earlier random stable data. But we lost the game in the process, unless science had also the goal of find the rules. And if that is the case, then it's winning. But not necessarily the case, since science is more and more drifting in the mist and less concerning itself with reestablishing the game. It's trying to blow up the whole playing field now in disgust. That's merely a reaction of disgust. Let's just blow everything up. Science is being perverted at every hand. The science of electricity is being used to kill men. The various drugs that they have, equally. All kinds of odds and ends of science are being perverted. Something which could run all of the steam engines in the world for 1,000 years is being blown up across the Nevada desert in a hope that someday or another it can get a chance to knock all the men out. In other words, science is sort of turned over to a messed view of the confusion, and then itself could be expected sooner or later to become a complete confusion, or to create a complete confusion, unless it itself learns at the same time that all it had to do was say with certainty, this is the stable datum. And to this thing associates this other data. Now we have two data comparable magnitude to which we'll associate all other data. It lost this idea and thought it was dealing with truth. The idea is that any science has an assumption point, and the assumption point need not be right. It need not even be close to then make an association of data. Now, in Dianetics and Scientology, we were hitting awfully close in with survive. And its datum of comparable magnitude is succumb. And now we have two data. And to these things, we can actually align the behavior patterns, the howness of life. And man, we as is did an awful lot of confusion right there. Wham, 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 wham. Everything started adding up across this and that. And we started working on eight dynamics, not one at a time, you see. And things started cross-relating, and people said, whew, that's relief. But then Dan Hubbard, he kept on inventing things, you know, and he kept on looking things. He kept on throwing out more stable data, more stable data. He was looking at the rest of it. And what happened was, is we still had, unobserved by anybody really, but stated in the first book, we still had an enormous number of pieces of the jigsaw puzzle still floating out there. See, there was still a lot of them adrift. I kept working because I didn't at any time assume completely that we'd wrapped it all up. I knew we were working from center stable data, but there was stuff hanging out in this direction and that. And finally, for gosh sakes, we get the modus operandi of don't know as agglomerating into a confusion, and discovering the resolution of the confusion consisted of simply postulating a no into the confusion, or as ising the don't know in the confusion. Well, we've got an interesting mechanism at work here, see? I mean, where the devil have we gone? We've gone into the subject of tailor-making and unmaking universes, see? And that's the subject which we could most easily deal with, and it leaves us as sort of a spectator on the whole picture. We say, oh, this is, look how easy this is. Zoom, 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 zoom. Now, that we have gone someplace is we are altering routinely things which everyone has considered unalterable. It's been 75 years people have been chanting, IQ cannot be changed, IQ cannot be changed. That's their stable data. Well, we just picked up a rifle and went, ping, because there isn't a case that comes under the hands of the center in Washington that doesn't jump in IQ at least 25 points in an intensive. And if you just keep on processing them, they keep on coming up. Talk about change IQ. I don't know how we would process anybody today without changing his IQ. See? His IQ is not a stable datum. He is not just that smart. His smartness, his intelligence, his ability to resolve problems is variable. Then to what do we relate this person? Well, we just have to relate this person to a basic understanding of all existence itself. So we're proceeding somewhere if we're doing this. Now, in Great Britain, we've unfortunately not had an expert psychometrist. We haven't had a school psychometrist to work on the cases around. We haven't been uniformly giving people testing and then giving them an intensive and then testing them again by standard tests. Now, what good are the standard tests? The standard tests are simply this good. They have been empirically derived and tested on thousands and thousands of people. And they've arrived at certain stated answers that expect certain behaviors. And by observation alone, why, they've got quite a thing here. psychology has one very important factor in it, and one very important thing that it has learned. It has learned testing, psychometric testing. And out of the entire field of psychology, we are very grateful to have the fact that they have resolved one thing, testing. Now, that's quite remarkable, but they did this experimentally and by experience, and they did a very, very good job of it. And we actually are their debtors to this degree. They didn't do anything with mice or anything like this, and they certainly didn't understand human behavior and thinking everybody was messed and that the brain did everything. But the devil with that, let's not worry about that one way or the other. Let's just recognize that there is a handful of wretches in there, and that we should be grateful to them for it. It'll be very hard to be grateful to the psychologist, by the way, because you're shooting the ground out from underneath his feet every time you process a pre-clear. It'll enter him into a confusion because his stable data is no longer stable. His testing was built on the idea that you couldn't alter an IQ, and we've turned it around and now use it to test the alteration of IQ. That's all right. The psychologist gets confused when he starts to study Dianetics and Scientology for the excellent reason that they, first of all, start shooting the ground out from underneath his feet by robbing him of stable data. And we don't care whether these stable data are right or wrong, they're his stable data. The brain does the thinking. Now, it didn't matter that this was justified or non-justified. He had a perfect right to put a random factor up here and say, look, this is a stable datum. Brain does the thinking, therefore we study the physiology of a person, and we learn all about behavior. He never learned all about behavior, but that was his stable datum, and he did do an awful lot of study, and we've inherited his tests. So he did have an area of confusion resolved, didn't he? And now you come in, and you say, Dianetics and Scientology is the very thing you ought to be in. Boom, 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 boom. And he feels like a tenderfoot that's just walked into a barroom full of cowboys. He doesn't like this. Actually, the walls start to spin on him if you want to know what it does to shoot out a stable datum. It isn't merely uncomfortable, it's agony. All right, now let's you and I process preclear. Get off that subject and a little bit and process preclear. And let's carefully select out every stable datum that he has shot into every confusion in his past. And let's carefully delete from the bank by what we know as erasure each and every stable datum which he has. And what are we going to leave him with? We're going to leave him with confusion, aren't we? All right, let's take a fellow sitting there, and he has a nice big confusion. Let's say this big confusion is the fact that he has an arthritic shoulder. It must be a confusion of some sort because he's stopping it somewhere. And probably the arthritis is just the center of a large, light energy mass which surrounds the entire area, you see? And there's a stop right there somewhere. And now, let's cure that arthritis by freeing his stable data about arthritis. Let's cure the arthritis by saying to him, now listen, your ideas about arthritis are all wrong. Now, the actual facts about the thing are different and contrary to what you believe they are. Your ideas about arms, and particularly the upper shoulder joint, are improper and incorrect. Do you know that you'll probably get rid of the calcium deposits by going into apathy? You can always cure arthritis by shooting the person into apathy. All you have to do is stand there and evaluate for him by telling him he's wrong. His opinion on this was incorrect. Shoulders are actually used to milk cows. He thought they were used to pitch baseballs. You know, and let's just disabuse him of all these strange and silly and peculiar ideas. Let's just knock all that flat, and his arthritis will no longer be arthritis, but his case will be apathy. And see how we would follow along that line? In other words, you could actually shoot the stable data out of a bank without increasing an individual's ability to tolerate confusion. You don't increase that a bit. We just shoot the stable data out and leave him in a complete swirling spin. You might ask why an insane person is thought to be in a spin. Because he is just that, in a spin. There are just too many particles going by at too much random. There's too much data coming by and conflicting with too much data. There's too little associated with too little. So that in some insane people, you get this actively, this disassociation. They come in, and the difference is they're pathetically serious about the whole thing. And they come in, and then they tell you, I'm awfully sorry, you're sure it'll be all right for me to come in the room, because it always starts raining cows, you know. And you start to converse with them on this subject of it always starts raining cows, and they immediately explain trigonometry to you. Only they don't get but three or four sentences into trigonometry, and they're explaining exactly how you lace up boots. This is known as disassociation. Or, much more horribly, they don't talk at all. It looks to me like you'd have to get somebody to put some new stable data in before you give up any old stable data. Or it looks to me like you'd have several routes, but one of those routes would be to give and raise his tolerance for not knowingness. You could do this simply by asking, what would it be all right for you not to know? That's a crude process, but it's just an experimental process, you see. What would it be all right for you not to know? You'd raise his tolerance for confusion. You could say, what confusion would you be willing to create? Any way, shape, or form that you wanted to say this. What ignorance would you care to leave untouched? What ignorance would you care to bring about? You get the idea? You could get him to change his mind and raise his tolerance for this. Confusion. Don't know. Don't know, confusion, pretty much the same thing. Raise his tolerance for that, and you know what he'll start doing? He'll start saying, you know what I've always thought? This is very funny, but I have always supposed that little boys should wear dresses. Very funny, yeah. Okay. This isn't logical to you. Well, that's why it's not logical to him. And nobody ever agreed with this. He simply got knocked around sufficiently, and a dress got put on him, and he got shaken up, confused, punished, and the dress was put on him, and he tried to take the dress off, and there was more confusion, and they put the dress on him, and he finally accepted somebody else's stable data. Little boys should wear dresses. They were just trying to shame him, for instance. Do something with him like that. They used to do this, still do it in farming communities. And wonder why they have such a high incidence of perversion. Well, anyhow, we just get him to accept another stable data by creating confusion. See? Here's what punishment does. You create a confusion and get him to accept the other stable data. Confusion, accept this stable data. And it's usually an irrational datum, like you must be quiet. Boy, that's a real stable datum. That's the rock bottom stable datum. It says you must not communicate. Follow me? Which will wind up as it's impossible to communicate. All right, how do we resolve problems with this? What is a problem? A problem is an area of I don't know held in place by the possibility that there's an I know. Got it? It's an area of I don't know held in place with the possibility that there's an I know. A problem exists because a confusion is not tolerated. A certain number of confusions are necessary to a game. Therefore, if you took away all a guy's problems, he'd have no game. Which is to say, if you took away all his don't knows, he would have no reason to communicate. Follow this? But if you shot out his stable data, these convictions which he has and with around which he is oriented a great deal of life, you would leave him with too much confusion. If you as-is all of his confusion, you would leave him with too little don't know. Somewhere in this is a resolution to the problem. When you have a present time problem with a preclear, you must take it up. Why? Because present time looks more confused to him than the past. So he will happily go into the past, but he will not face present time. Trying to get him to live in this universe is trying to get him to realize he can communicate with this universe. If there are dangerous, confusing factors in his immediate environment in present time, he then believes that he cannot communicate with present time. So he tries to hold these factors in abeyance one way or the other. If you just ask him what he was going to do about them, you would get him to put some sort of a stable datum into them, or start to. And his confusion would just melt away. Why would it melt away? You just ask him to postulate any action. He is right now drawing back from action. Actions are going forward, which he finds antipathetic to his survival. These actions are saying you can't survive. Now you get him to inject any postulated action into this problem of any kind whatsoever, and the problem will lessen as a confusion. Doesn't matter what's the right action, whether it's feasible or anything else. You just ask him, what are you going to do about it? You know, he says, looky here, I have gout. Gout? Is that horrible? Gout? Well, just the very fact that he has gout, and he's up here and it's down there, tells you that he's learned a word to put into it called gout. See, he just learned this word, gout. But that's the only word he's got for it. Why doesn't he call it gout soup? See? Why doesn't he call it tricycles, wagons, cars, cows, pigs? Why doesn't he call it blades of grass, planets? That's a planet, see? That's a blade of grass. See, if he chewed at it this way long enough, he would, as is, unfortunately, his foot first and then the gout. But he should be rid of his gout. Because the gout is there's an impossibility to communicate, isn't it? But you ask him, what are you going to do about the gout? He would say, what am I going to do about the gout? That's up to the doctor. Then you'd say, no, what are you going to do about it? Well, I'm going to limp, that's a cinch. And his gout will feel better? You say, what else are you going to do about this gout? Oh, I don't know, saw him a leg off, I guess. And his gout will get better? You're just getting to put stable data in terms of action, postulated action, into the thing. And he'll get better because of it. And that's how you solve present time problems. Just get them to say they're going to do something about it. And it unbalances the whole thing. You got it now? Well, now I hope you understand stable data and the confusion and how this relates to communication, and I don't know. Because these are the most important things we know today in the entire business of processing. Thank you.
Thank you, Len.